Welcome to Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander. Get Your Barbecue On is a show for backyard cooks looking for tips and insight into barbecuing, grilling, entertaining, and enjoying themselves outside with delicious food. Each week, we'll share some barbecuing and grilling tips, techniques, recipes, and a few pitmaster secrets you just have to know. Every show will feature fun, interesting, and informative guests. And we'll also answer listener questions. Please send your questions to getyourbbqon@gmail.com or visit our website at kenshardwoodbbq.com and click radio show. Welcome to today's show. This is Ken from Get Your Barbecue On, the podcast. And I'm here today with Soul Man G.
Hey,
Soul Man G is sitting in today for the doctor.
Who
just can't make it in today.
Yeah. And it's been a long time since I've been on this show. What's been keeping you from inviting me on the show, Ken?
Hey, I heard you were busy with WWE.
I've been sending in messages. Didn't you get my question in a few weeks ago?
Yeah, I did. I got your question. We answered the Soul Man G question.
I appreciate that. You see, I was knocking on your door the whole time and you didn't let me in.
And as a matter of fact, the doctor used one of your recipes on the show the
other day. You kidding
me? Yeah, he did.
Get out of here. Which one?
The rotisserie chicken.
See, yeah. I knew I shouldn't have told him about that.
Yeah, so the doctor used one of your recipes and he talked about it on the show. And as a matter of fact, he got a passing grade that day.
Did he?
For re-barbecuing the rotisserie chicken.
Well, God bless him.
So, man, we have a great show today.
Ooh, tell me about it.
Well, it's a couple things. One is we have a phenomenal guest on here today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have Kevin Hamilton on the show today. He's a music creator. Mm. He's a performer, and he also produces and he teaches music. He is one of the co-founders of Southwest Soul Circuit, and that is his production company. So he's going to be on here today talking to us about music and the arts, and it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be a phenomenal show.
I'll say.
From a phenomenal guest.
What
all
a
right?
treat. That sounds fun.
All right. But today's show, we're going to be talking about winterizing your grill or your smoker.
Wait, say that again.
I said winterizing your grill or smoker.
Okay, I've heard of tenderizing. I've heard of other isings, but I've never heard of winterizing. What is a winter? Did you make this word up, Ken?
No, I didn't make this word up. I think that's because you live in Arizona.
Yeah.
And there's not much we have to winterize in Tucson, Arizona.
Oh, I see. So this is a cold weather deal.
This is a cold weather deal.
I get it.
These are for our listeners that live back east, in the Midwest, and in the North.
Well, okay. Welcome to all of our listeners in the East.
In those places that get cold.
Doomed to get snow this winter, I'm sure.
Or if they haven't gotten it already.
Ah.
All right. Well, the reason that I want to talk about this today is because, I mean, really, it's tragic.
Why? What's going on?
The abuse and the neglect that I have witnessed.
Oh, no.
You know, over time, I've just witnessed so much grill and smoker abuse. Grill and smoker abuse.
Oh, heaven forbid.
Yeah, it's like this piece of equipment that has, over the spring, the summer, and the fall, that's given you so much savory,
it has,
mouth-watering,
love it,
joy. Mm-hmm. Winter comes and you just like forget about it.
You got a point there. You do have a point there. There's a lot of people that tend to kind of put their grills aside during the winter months.
Yeah,
that's true.
And you visit. This is when I go back east, and I must say, you know, I've been to some of my relatives' house, and then look out the back door, look out the sliding glass door, and I see this equipment sitting out there in the snow and rain and uncovered and just dealing with the elements all alone.
Oh my, all alone. And it's heartbreaking, isn't it?
It's heartbreaking for me, you know, somebody that just really cares about barbecue and grilling and you know. So, you know, one of the purposes of this discussion and this winterizing today is stop the abuse now.
All right. Tell us, how do we do it?
Stop the abuse now. So really, what I'm saying to you is we don't want to wait until the spring and then our grill is all beat up and rusted and that, and then it, you know, doesn't work properly. If you just take a little time, a little time to properly clean your grill and cover it before the snow, before the rain, before, and put it up properly, then when spring comes the first time, you know, when you get that idea in your head that, you know, I want to go out, I want to grill a burger, I want to do this or whatever, all you have to do is go out, take the cover off. All you have to do is pull the charcoal grill out of the shed or from wherever it is, and then you just, all you do is just pull the cover off and you just have at it.
I see.
Otherwise, you're going to be running back and forth to the hardware store. You're going here and there. You got a hole in the grill from where it's rusted out over the wintertime. We want to avoid all those things.
I get you.
So the thing is, so we're going to do some winterizing. We're going to clean the grill. And so I'm just going to go through some steps to help you help your grill.
Well, that's nice. Because a healthy grill, you treat your grill right, your grill will treat you right.
Absolutely.
Is that how that works?
That's how it works.
All right.
That's how it works. So, I mean, so the first thing we want to do is we want to clean the grates and clean the internal parts of the grill if we have a gas grill.
Gotcha.
So the thing is, first thing you want to, if you have a gas grill, fire that baby up for about 15 to 20 minutes.
On high.
So what you're trying to do, though, is you're trying to burn off those big food particles, big food parts, and it's going to make it easier to clean off the grates because you have some food buildup and other things on there from, you know, the last time you grilled. And that's going to just kind of like burn it all away pretty much. And then it's going to make it easier for you to take the grill brush or the wire brush and just get all that stuff off the grates.
Oh, my.
Right. So you just go ahead, scrape all that food off the grates and all the debris, and then you're fine. So then once it's cooled down a little bit, you don't want to take those grates. And then you could, anything that's really stuck on there, you can take some soapy water and just get those very difficult things that didn't want to come off the grill. And you can get them off with that.
Awesome. And so, you're doing all this while it's cool, right?
Right. So once you have heated up the grill.
Yeah.
I mean, you let it cool down a little bit, you know, about 15 minutes, and then you can take that wire brush and you can get you can do that while it's still warm.
Oh, I see.
Right. But once it cools all the way down, then you can take those grates off. They're already, you know, pretty much clean. And then you could take it in some soapy water. Now, I always recommend, and I'm going to use a brand name here, but I'm going to go with Dawn, you know, and that's what I like to use. You get some Dawn. It's great for removing grease and oil and those. So get some soapy water, some Dawn, and you can go ahead and finish cleaning those grates off.
Gotcha.
Right. So after you clean the grates off, now if you have a gas grill, the other thing that you have in there, and these are some of the other internal components. Now, here is a word of warning.
Okay, please.
Before you continue and you start removing some of these internal parts of the gas grill, make sure the gas is off.
That would help.
And I would recommend disconnecting the line to the propane tank. And then we're going to go ahead and finish cleaning this grill.
All right.
So we disconnect all that stuff. And then you're going to take off the, I mean, what they call, there's some other grids. And then you have the flame tamers. And these are the things that sit over the flame. And these are where a lot of just drippings and food get down on that. So you just want to clean the other stuff up in the grill. And if you still have one of those older grills where you have the little bricks and stuff in there, you can also get all that stuff off the bricks, get it off, and just clean all that stuff up. You can use the wire brush and that. And then those flame tamers and the other parts of the grid that are in that gas grill. You can take those and you can also soak those in some soapy dish water, some soapy Dawn water, or whatever you have, whatever you're using for to remove grease or whatever type of soap that you want to use to do that.
Now, this doesn't have to be like spick and span clean, does it?
No, it doesn't have to be spick and span clean. No, I mean, you're just trying to really get all the big stuff off of it. It doesn't have to be showroom new and showroom shining.
Gotcha.
But really, we're just trying to get enough, get all the stuff off so you can just protect it and it's going to perform well next year. Yeah.
I get it.
So you can just scrape. I mean, really, if you don't want to soak it, you want to do all those things, you just want to make sure that all the stuff or anything that could affect the gas from that's obstructing the little holes where the gas and where the fire flame comes out, that you clean all that stuff up.
Right.
So once you've done that and you have cleaned off the little bricks, you just get all the stuff, all the debris out of there, and then you're ready to go.
Right.
Now, if you're not mechanically inclined or you don't really know how to put stuff back together, then, I'm saying don't go too far with taking things apart inside the gas grill. Okay, but really, you're just trying to clean it up, get all the debris out of there, and you'll be good to go.
Got you. Okay.
All right. So that's the gas grill. Now, if you have a charcoal type grill, the other thing is you want to make sure you remove all the ash out of the charcoal grill.
Oh, boy.
Because then, especially if you're in, like I said, you're in one of these winter climates, what's going to happen is you really want to avoid rust. And then ash, water gets in with that ash and that just accelerates.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's going to accelerate the decay of the metal.
Hmm.
So you want to get all that ash out. Again, you can take some soapy water, wash all that inside of the grill out, dry it off very well, and then you want to take it and cover it.
Got you.
Okay. Right. So then let's talk about the exterior.
All right.
So most gas grills, you find a lot of them, they're stainless steel. Some of them are not, but you take that soapy water again. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure you get all the grease and oil off of it. And then if you have a stainless steel grill, you want to come back with maybe some stainless steel cleaner or some polish and get it polished up real good.
Keep it pretty.
Mm-hmm. Keep it pretty. Now, if you I have 55-gallon drum that sit in the back.
Yes.
In my backyard that I use. Mm-hmm. And I've got one that I've had since 1995.
So they last.
They last. They can last if you take care of it.
Right.
I mean, and the other thing is that I do live in Arizona and it's been an Arizona grill, so it hasn't experienced those harsh winters. But
I see.
It does rain here. It does. And so I protect it. So one of the things I do, I know a lot of people will clean up their grill and they'll paint it and do all that kind of stuff in the springtime. What I like to do is to kind of knock off that rust, clean up the outside real good.
Gotcha.
Before I put it up.
Okay.
And so I think that like Rust-Oleum paint and all that paint and everything is going to be kinder and do my grill more justice.
That makes sense.
Before the winter comes than it is after the winter.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So a lot of people will, when springtime comes around and it's spring cleaning, and then that's when they'll like do all their work and maintenance and paint the grill and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
But I like to do that stuff before the winter comes, before I put it up. And so the grill, that's why I have a 55-gallon drum grill from 1995.
Amazing.
And it is my favorite piece of grilling equipment at the house. All right.
Keeps it real.
So if you have a charcoal grill, then take care of those. If you have a little rust or all that stuff, take care of it at this time of year before the winter and stop that rust, eliminate that rust at that time.
That makes a lot of sense, because when by the time January rolls around, the winter snow is kind of going around, you'll be ready for that Super Bowl barbecue and grill, right?
Well, yeah, if you want to bust it out in the wintertime. But
how many people do that?
When I live back that way, a lot of people weren't grilling and barbecuing when it's like a few feet of snow outside.
Wow.
Right. There's no really nowhere to a few feet or a lot of snow or whatever. And so most people put their grills up and they don't bust them out, bring them out till the spring.
That is a shame. So y'all go without grilling. Y'all go without that wonderful grill barbecue food for that long.
Well, Some folks do, some folks don't. Nah. But I think the majority of people do not grill in the wintertime. Mm. Do not smoke in the wintertime. Oh. I mean, there are some challenges to smoking in the wintertime. And one is that ambient temperature, the temperature outside the grill. And it just makes it tougher to keep the temperature on the inside of the grill when it's below zero.
Got you.
Right. And the last thing is cover the grill. Most grass grills come with a cover. Mm-hmm. I've witnessed a lot of grass grills just sitting out in the backyard uncovered. I don't know whatever happened to the cover.
I've seen
those. Right. So first thing, cover the grill. Now, if you could put the grill under a covered space or in a shed, that would be the best thing for it during the winter.
That makes sense. Because you definitely want to keep it away from the elements and all the rain, especially here in Arizona with the monsoons. Now, over where you're from, like the East Coast and everything, you have to deal with the snow. Now, how does salt and how does flavoring and all that type of stuff, how does that deal with the grill as well?
Well, I mean, the thing about it is salt. I mean, salt is real. I mean, that's more of an issue with cars back east.
Gotcha.
And that's why they get undercoatings and all that. But the salt is really not going to be an issue with snow and rain or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But salt would really accelerate the metal deterioration. But you don't have to worry about that pretty much. But it's just really the snow. Or if you leave the coals or the ash in the grill and the water gets in there and that whole acidity, that whole thing, and that also will accelerate the metal deterioration.
From the inside,
yeah. Anyway, that is winterizing the grill or smoker and help us stop the abuse.
Well, you heard it here.
All right. Well, it's time for us to take a break. And when we return, we're going to answer a listener question.
All right.
Thank you. This is Ken from Ken's Hardwood Barbecue Restaurant, where we have created a blend of barbecue and Southern cooking. We have taken the best barbecue styles and flavors from Texas, Missouri, and the Carolinas. What food has meant to my family is a way to come together in fellowship. We invite you to come and join us. We are located at 5250 East 22nd Street in Tucson at the crossroads of Craycroft and 22nd. Call us at 520-745-4746. Come on down and get your barbecue on. Hey, welcome back to Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander, the podcast. And I'm here today with my guest host, Soul Man G.
Woo! The one and only.
The one and only Soul Man G. Coming off the turnbuckle.
That's right. Jumping off the post, baby. That's what we'll do.
Yeah. Well, I guess you know, my listener audience doesn't know that my guest host today is a veteran.
He is.
Of the WWE.
That's right. I wish I could say I was, but no, I'm not quite there yet.
You're not there yet?
Not there yet, but I do have a lot of associates that have been. So
all right.
The doors are totally open to me if I suggest if I ever want to walk through them.
All right. So on the left turnbuckle over here, I have... Soul Man G.
Coming off the top rope with that bionic elbow, baby.
Hey, so Soul Man, I understand we have a listener question today.
Yes, we definitely have a question. This comes from Luke from Orange County, California. He writes, "You keep emphasizing the importance of using a meat thermometer. However, my father never used one. So why is it important?"
Well, the first thing is that a meat thermometer, the reason that we do it is because we want to make sure that folks don't get sick.
That's right.
There are certain foodborne illnesses that if certain meats don't reach a certain temperature, they live.
Yes.
And they can multiply in your belly, in your gut. And we don't want that. So really the biggest reason we use it is because the fact that we want people to be safe and healthy. The last thing you want is somebody coming to your house and leaving and the next day they're sick and having all kinds of stomach issues.
Terrible.
Yeah, the likelihood of you hosting the next party is going to be
very slim.
Very slim.
Say the least. Yes, food poisoning.
Right, right. And the other thing is, mm-hmm. so the first thing has to do with health and making sure the meat is at a sufficient temperature.
Important.
So folks don't get sick. The other thing is you want to check the temperature. You want to reach a certain temperature so the food is at the tenderness that you want in meat, and make sure, like, for instance, beef or pork, if it's in a roast or a steak, it is safe to eat it at 145 degrees. If it's reached 145 degrees for 15 seconds, it's safe to eat it. You don't have to worry about any foodborne illnesses. But if you have somebody that you're cooking meat for and they want it medium well, then that's going to be 155 degrees. Mm. If they want it well done, that's 165 degrees. Mm-hmm. Or if you're cooking ribs, if you watch any of the barbecue shows, then folks want a certain level of tenderness. In order to reach that certain level of tenderness, the best guide is the temperature, the internal temperature of the meat.
That's interesting.
Right. And so we take it at Ken's Hardwood Barbecue, we take our briskets off at a certain temperature.
Right.
And if we take them off in that little range, some in that little 5 degree range, our brisket's going to be perfect. It's going to be juicy. It's going to be tender, and it's going to be done.
Right. So
the reason that you use a meat thermometer is for consistency and for health reasons.
That makes sense. But I am starting to see more of a trend in, let's say, pink pork. Now, what are the risk factors of pink pork now? Like being served rare or medium rare as opposed to well done? As we were taught to, you know, basically keep our white meat and well done.
Well, the thing about it is, for safety, you want to reach 135 degrees. And so medium rare, you know, a lot of times people want their meat at a certain level. So 145 degrees, that's where you have to reach before you don't have any foodborne illnesses. Mm-hmm. But if you want your meat, like a lot of steaks, people want their steak either medium rare. Some people even want them rare, and that's like 125 degrees or 135 degrees. Now, if you have a really certain about your meat and how it's been stored and how it's been shipped to you and how it's been processed, then, you know, you can take that chance of having meat that hasn't reached that temperature that it is safe and that any kind of foodborne illnesses have been eliminated.
So pork in specific, so pink pork will or will not kill you.
All I can say here is that the USDA minimum temperature for pork to eat safely is 145 degrees.
All right.
Now, if you decide that you want your pork medium rare, which is 135 degrees, or you want it rare at 125 degrees, then you're opening yourself up for possible foodborne illness.
You're taking a risk.
You're taking a risk.
Don't
You're
do
taking
it.
A risk. So, like I said before, if you are pretty sure about the source of the meat or the steaks that you have that you've purchased, then most of the time you're probably going to be fine. You go to restaurants. Most restaurants, especially steakhouses or whatever, they have their meat has been controlled the whole time, and you know,
I'll say
right.
All right. Well, there's your answer, Luke, from Orange County, California. A lovely place in this this country, by the way. I've been there a couple times. Fine looking area.
All right. Thanks a lot, Luke. Hey, two reasons: safety and consistency.
There you go.
Hey, it's time for us to take another break. But when we return, we will be talking to Kevin Hamilton. Kevin Hamilton is a music creator. He performs, produces, and teaches music. And he is also co-founder of Southwest Soul Circuit. So we'll be right back and we'll be talking to Kevin.
We here at Octavia Social Media Strategy support the brave men and women who risk their lives on the front line of this coronavirus. We ask that everybody protect themselves and each other by following all the basic steps necessary to curb this disease. Remember to wash your hands and wear your mask at all times because family and friends are the most important gifts on earth. Please visit our website at www.octavia.social to help join us in this effort. We look forward to working with you. And when it comes to social media, let us help you be seen, be known, and be the expert.
Hey, welcome back to the show. This is Ken Alexander. Alexander on Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander, the podcast.
Hey, hey.
I'm here with my guest host, Soul Man G.
Woo.
He's on the turnbuckle.
I am.
Hey, so we're here with our special guest, the phenomenal Kevin Hamilton.
Hey, what's up, guys? How y'all doing?
We're great, great. Kevin Hamilton, he is a music creator, producer, teacher, and he is also the co-founder of Southwest Soul Circuit.
That's right. Southwest Soul Circuit.
Yeah, your own production company.
Yeah.
Man, you come a long way.
Man, I didn't realize how many years it's been, man.
I
hate to say it, but dog, man, you get on that trail and you get to working, man. Mm-hmm. You don't really follow time. You just do what you do, and then you look back and see you've been doing it for 20 years.
True.
Right.
This town, man. I'm like, wow.
Time flies. I remember the Heart and Soul days.
Man, it was a lot of fun at Jamaica Bay and Glorious.
Yeah,
man.
Right.
So much fun.
Wow.
Yeah, such a great crowd there too. Yeah, Alma Gutierrez and Heart and Soul, they were just so cool, man. They were, I think I met them at a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
I was in this hotel. And for something else, and I heard this banging band. I'm like, man, let me go see what they're doing. I go in there, and this band is just jamming, and I'm just sitting on the side, just jamming. And Alma is always that lady to say, "Hey, you sing?" I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "You want to sing a song?" I'm like, "Cool." I'll never forget it. They played an Earth, Wind, and Fire song. Let's groove tonight.
Okay.
Man, we tore that thing up. I was like, oh, you want to be in the band? I was like, yeah. So we played four nights a week, man.
Wow.
Yeah, for years. That was a lot of fun.
Wow, man. So that was back in the
2000s.
So how did you get to Tucson?
Raytheon brought us out here.
Oh, yeah.
My family came out here. Wife and kids came out here because my wife ended up getting a job at Raytheon.
And
been out here ever since, man.
Awesome. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you came out here from where?
So, I left Nashville. I was in Nashville for about 5 years. And man, I came out here to Tucson. And I had the biggest culture shock of my entire life.
Your entire life.
Yeah. Man. Even I didn't have as much culture shock in Japan as I did here in Tucson.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Right.
So, man, it took maybe about 3 years for me to realize that Tucson was what it was at the time. So.
Well, was it like a one-horse town, or what are you referring to?
Well, so for me, I was always able to go to a town anywhere in the world.
Right.
And find soul music community.
Hmm.
You know, community where you have artists and musicians, singers, and audiences and venues that catered to R&B and hip hop and soul, you know, live music all over the world, you know. But moving to Tucson, I realized, man, that community wasn't here.
Hmm.
And I was very frustrated because I was able to fall right into that community anywhere I went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it was frustrating the first few years. Came here. Transferred to the U of A as an opera singer as well. So I was in school full time.
Wow.
Yeah, I was working like crazy, man. I was on the road gigging. I was a full-time student, had a wife and kids. I played for a church. I ran my business. I did production.
Wow.
Man, I don't even know how I did it back then. But
man, so, you know, you talk about opera, talk about R&B, soul. Man, you're going to have to tell us how all this came about, man. How did Kevin, what is it in your rearing that brought all this that I got to sing?
It's crazy,
out, man.
Where'd
that come from?
So I started singing as a child, you know, around 9, 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And picked up really quick, man. You know, in Dallas, I'm from Dallas originally.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And hey, man, he throwing them
hands. I got some
up
folks
in
up in Dallas.
Hey, yeah. Man, I love Dallas. Man. I love Dallas. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I was afforded so many amazing opportunities in Dallas to mm-hmm. sing in churches and get
as a kid.
Training. As a kid, man. Yeah. I mean, I remember being 10 years old singing in front of 10,000 people, man.
Wow.
You know, and you know, I've always sang gospel music. It was my way of healing, mm-hmm. you know, kind yeah. of dealing with the stuff you deal with growing up as a kid with, you know, all kind of issues you're dealing with, you know. And I ended up going to the performing arts school in high school there in Dallas. And I just kind of thought the world was like that. It was kind of like fame.
Yeah,
in Dallas,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it was an amazing school. You know, Norah Jones is an alum of that school.
Okay.
I was in school with Erykah Badu and mm-hmm. Roy Hargrove and
wow.
God's Property and, mm. you know, a lot of like legendary gospel and R&B singers. We didn't know that it was that type of place. We thought every place had that. Yeah. So anyway, I just continued on with learning classical music from what I learned in high school.
Wow.
And so I've done three operas and as a baritone on a collegiate level. As a musician, man, you know, people ask what kind of music do you do? I say whatever pays the bills. You know.
Yeah.
So I started playing piano when I was 20. Mm-hmm. Over in Japan, I started playing for one of the Air Force Chapel services, a gospel service over there when I was in the Air Force.
Oh, so you're in the Air Force.
Yeah.
That took you abroad.
That took me abroad. And open my eyes up to the world market of music because they love me over there, man. And I had a chance to travel and do music overseas, and you know, all of those experiences really helped hone me into being someone who just loves music and not just one genre or style, but just really loves to make music and connect with people.
So where are some of the places you said Japan? I traveled a lot, man, and you go to these hotels. And you sometimes, every now and then, you run into some really nice bands.
Oh,
and so
I'm going to tell you, man, I didn't like playing in other people's bands.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't like playing little clubs and restaurants and stuff because I got somebody, I didn't speak the language.
Okay,
then.
Right.
And this guy who did speak the language, he booked me for a job that paid $3,000. But we got paid $300.
Wow.
So I'm like, man, I ain't playing these places no more, man. I produce my own show. So
right.
I did tours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had a guy on Kyushu Island mm-hmm. in Miyazaki who heard me play. And he said, hey, you want to come here and play? I was like, yeah. And he set it up 6 months later. I had a tour. I did 8 shows in 10 days in like 4 or 5 different cities.
This is why you were. This is when you were in the Air Force.
This is actually I was getting out of the Air Force and need to make some money real
quick. Wow.
So it came in right on time. Made a nice little grip. We were about to stay over there, but you know, my wife, she wanted to be able to buy collard greens and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They didn't have them over there. You can't get that in Japan. So.
Yeah, no.
But you know, I toured right after I got out of the military for a while, and then we moved to Nashville, which is music capital. You know?
For sure.
And I had phenomenal opportunities there to record on Studio Row as a singer and musician. Mm-hmm. I went to Tennessee State University.
All right.
In the music department
Tennessee State there in Nashville.
And Nashville was amazing. I was on the road 4 nights a week with Grammy Award winning artists while as a student at Tennessee State while playing for a prestigious church. And it was crazy, man. I just threw myself into music and made the best out of all of the opportunities that came about.
Wow. And so, man, you really brought a lot to Tucson. You brought a lot to Tucson.
Yeah, I brought it here, but I don't think Tucson was ready at the time. I moved here in 99 ready. You know, I told myself, you know, we were setting a blaze in Nashville, just playing music. And I said, I'm going to get a banging drummer and a great bass player and a saxophone player. We're going to blaze up the Southwest.
Right.
And it was really hard to find people who knew the music and who understood the genre, you know, all the things that you have to know to play black music, you know.
Yeah.
So that was part of the culture shock that I experienced as well. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's why I started, you know, producing shows myself.
Yeah. So then you created Southwest Soul Circle. So what's that all about? What's the need in this town for Southwest Soul Circuit?
Yeah. So originally I created Hamilton Entertainment.
Oh, okay.
Because I needed to get out there and, you know, start playing.
Mm-hmm.
And producing myself. You know, this was before Southwest Soul Circuit.
Right.
But then in 06, I realized that in order for me to play in venues that I wanted to play in where the music was the main focus.
Yes.
I needed to produce it myself. I didn't want to be background music while people talked.
Right.
In the restaurant.
Right.
I didn't want to be just that dude in the corner. That's not the optimal way to present music.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Tanisha and I created Southwest Soul Circuit.
You said Tanisha.
So my wife and I we co-founded Southwest Soul Circuit in 06.
Okay.
And so we really wanted to make sure that we gave the community a great listening experience for Black music.
Yes.
So if you heard gospel music, you're going to have people who knew how to play gospel music.
Okay.
You know, real musicians who know the music,
right.
Singers right. who know the music, who understand the genre. So we wanted to provide, you know, talented local and regional artists with the opportunity to showcase their talent
mm-hmm.
in an environment which was suitable for their music to be heard as the main content for the event. I also realized that I've always been a teacher. I've been a natural teacher. So, you know, I wanted to mentor vocalists and instrumentalists, giving them an opportunity to know what this thing is like on a world stage. Just because you're in Tucson, just because you're from Tucson, doesn't mean that you're only relegated to the opportunities of Tucson.
Right.
This is before the internet was big.
Right.
I always believe that it's not about where you're from, but it really is about what you're doing, where you're at right now.
Right. I know you do a lot of teaching.
Yeah.
Voice lessons and
band mentorship and all of that stuff. And then other thing I wanted to do was to collaborate with these world-class musicians and get them the opportunity to connect with independent artists in this region
as
well.
Right.
So we've been able to kind of partner up,
mm-hmm.
you know, big time artists with regional art, you know, independent artists
mm-hmm.
through virtual collaborations and through concerts and stuff. So that's why we created it.
Yeah. I know you guys have done some beautiful things here. And one that just really sticks out is that the Sidney Poitier and the can you tell us about that, man? That was a beautiful experience.
Oh, that was really cool. So we collaborate with, we do a lot of shows in theaters. So, you know, Dallas Convention Center, Fourth and B, or the House of Blues in San Diego.
Right.
You know, Fox Theater here in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the Fox, they were doing movies of 1967.
Right.
And they had three movies that came out, Sidney Poitier movies that came out that year.
Wow.
One was In the Heat of the Night.
Good one.
To Serve with Love. And
what was the other one? Serve with Love.
I can't remember the third one.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to do before those movies, before they screened the movies at the Fox.
Right.
I recognized that there were so many amazing songs that came out in 1967.
True. Yeah.
That year was amazing. So we ended up doing music from either the movie that played that night,
mm-hmm.
or we did someone else's music as a little concert right before the movie aired.
Cool.
So it was a fun little situation.
Was it Guess Who's Coming for Dinner?
That's what it was.
That's the one.
I think that was what it was. Yeah. There you go. He remembers.
See?
Yeah. So I thought it was a real cool collaboration between Southwest Soul Circuit and the Fox Theater to provide live music and a movie
mm-hmm.
in a beautiful, pristine theater.
How cool was that?
Yeah. I really feel like, you know, the Fox is the jewel of the Southwest, and there's no more beautiful place in the Southwest to present music.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, you want to get dressed up. You want to go to a nice place. You want the sound to be right. You want the lights to be right. Mm-hmm. You want everything to be right. Mm-hmm. So
that was a great event. It was a remarkable event.
Thank you, man.
You see, I still remember it, and we really enjoyed it, and it was a packed house.
Yeah, that was fun, man. Right. That was really a lot of fun. It's funny. It takes people who follow us to help me remember all the stuff we done. Yeah, and I'll just say this. Since I moved here in 99, I've actually produced over 1,000 live events.
Wow. That's a lot, bro.
So it's kind of hard to remember stuff
from time to time.
So it's cool when friends like Ken can tell you, hey, man, I was chilling at the place, man, when you did this and that. I love it, man, because it's like he's helping me remember.
Right. You know, it's certain things I remember, man. You know, you have different artists and things that that just kind of bring you back. And the other thing I remember is the concert when you busted out with Nature Boy. That's the other one. So
that was the Roberta Flack concert.
Right.
Yeah. So Southwest Soul Circuit produced that show with Roberta Flack.
I see.
And then we opened up for her, and I had a great time.
Right. And I'm like a Nat King Cole, crazy fan. Yeah. And then when you busted out with Nature Boy, I was like, wow, man, I was standing up. Like, go.
That was so fun, man. I had one of the best shows of my life that night. Mm-hmm. I feel really fortunate to make music and get paid for it and to share it with other people, man. So it really feels good to know that people appreciate and that they enjoy it, man. So I appreciate you, Ken.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, well, it's time for us to take a break. We're here with the phenomenal Kevin Hamilton.
All right. I'll take it.
Yeah. We'll be right back in a few minutes. So we'll talk to you in a few.
Hey, Tucson, do you have a hankering for some good old down-home cooking? Well, you're in luck. Along with our award-winning barbecue, we have Southern Fried Catfish, mac and cheese, collard greens, fried okra, peach cobbler, sweet potato pie, and much more. 745-4746. That's 745-4746. Or visit our website. Come on down to Ken's Hardwood Barbecue and get your barbecue on.
Hey, welcome back to the show. This is Ken with Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander, the podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm here with today's co-host, Soul Man G.
The one and only.
All right. Hey, and we're here with Kevin Hamilton.
Hey.
Yeah, we're in here talking, all things music. We're talking about the arts. And Kevin, you talked to us. You told us about Southwest Soul Circuit. You wanted to bring it into, Tucson. Mm-hmm. And what are you guys offering? What services are you offering with Southwest Soul Circuit?
So Southwest Soul Circuit is a music production firm. We specialize in producing concerts, festivals, studio recordings.
Mm-hmm.
And, we do that internally for our productions, but we also offer live performances for clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Live performances for people who want to hire us to do mm-hmm. their events. I'm also a producer. So I'm a producer for hire. I'll allow, people to come in and work with me as in a producer for hire kind of situation.
Yeah.
We've run recording studios here for 15 years. Garden Level Studios was down at La Placita for
a long time. That, right downtown.
Yeah, man, I was.
Yeah, you guys were.
Soul of downtown Tucson.
Right. Mm.
And then we ended up moving over to Grant for a couple of years. And then, now I'm doing most of my productions at a home studio.
Okay.
Or if I have a larger production, I have other studios I can rent out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a producer for hire, and I still provide private music instruction. So private vocal coaching, private piano coaching. And then I teach general musicianship on other instruments.
Sweet.
Wow, yeah, that is sweet. Now, the other thing is that you guys have like this charitable arm. And I know that the Southwest Soul Circuit loves the kids.
They
love the kids. And you guys have done a bunch of stuff. And you really, you have this passion for bringing music to children. Mm-hmm. And share some of that with us.
Well, it really started with me. I told you before that, you know, music really saved my life, man. Like, if I didn't have music as a kid, man, I wouldn't have been able to cope with a lot of the things that I dealt with.
I'll say.
And so I realized that, you know, we all need an outlet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have your young lady here who's behind the mixing board mm-hmm. in high school.
Right, right.
Learning how to do audio mixing and production. You know, it's a great outlet. It gives you a chance to focus, you know.
Yeah, right.
So I've always had a community service / youth component to any business that I had. And so it started out with me offering a songwriting and recording arts workshop for kids one summer out of my studio.
Okay.
And that turned out to be wonderful. And so from there, there was a judge in town that wanted to work with us. He went ahead and started a Garden Youth Development Project.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Garden Youth Development Project is a youth development organization which uses music projects to teach subjects of academia and life skills through the arts.
Good deal.
And the reason why I did it that way was because, you know, the arts have a stigma to them, like it's extracurricular.
Right.
That's true.
Right.
That's very true.
But if you really look at the arts, I think the arts are the mortar to the bricks of society.
I agree with that. I like that philosophy.
If you don't have arts and culture, you don't have society.
Amen.
So I've always used that as a component of any for-profit, non-profit I've ever done. So, but with Garden Youth Development Project, we put together 10 programs for kids from 0 to 17.
Right.
To help them learn what they need to learn at that developmental stage.
Mm-hmm. We just recently had Sadie Shaw on the show. And mm-hmm. Sadie Shaw, her background is in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And she ran a successful campaign and was elected to the Tucson Unified School District.
I saw that. That's
school
wonderful.
Board, right. And that's what she talked about here. And we were talking about how the arts, that you need more than the three R's, and how that is really the glue. And I mean, that's mm-hmm. it keeps people sane, man. It gives them, you know, if you just have reading, writing, arithmetic, and that kind of stuff, it's not enough.
You know, I just thought of something. Can you imagine wishing a family member happy birthday at a birthday party without singing happy birthday to them?
No, mm-hmm. no.
It'd just be like a happy birthday handshake or something. That doesn't sound right.
Can you imagine a world without music?
Come on, man. You know, I have a friend who say, you know what? I don't trust people that don't like music.
The thing is, man, music is everywhere.
Yes, it is.
Everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so many places. You don't even realize how many places there's music.
Yeah.
Every show, everything, it is nothing without the music.
Here's the thing. You know, anything you do creative, anything you do, you have to be creative.
That's mm-hmm. right.
If you are a CEO of a tech company,
yes,
you have to be creative in how you create mm-hmm. your products or your mm-hmm. software.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's right. True.
If you're a cook, you have to be creative in how you make your food.
Culinary arts.
And, I mean, it's all art.
Right.
You know? So mm-hmm. instead of looking at the arts as a subject, the way they do in Western education,
mm-hmm.
you have to really look at the components of life.
Yeah.
And know that they all fit together.
It's all woven. It has to be woven into.
Right. Mm-hmm. You can't separate.
That's very true.
You know, it's like trying to take salt out of food that you've already cooked with it, you know, cooked it into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
flavor.
Flavor. Yeah.
It's flavor. I like
it's
that.
The flavor.
That's what it is. It's flavor.
Flavor of life.
Hey, man.
I take
Amen.
That.
All right. Right. So tell me. 2020, man, it's been this. Woo.
Wow.
I mean, that's what I, when you say 2020, people just like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, they
and it ain't
like,
over yet.
They just look, they take a, you know, sucking teeth and this and that. But tell me how 2020 has affected Southwest Soul Circuit and Kevin Hamilton and the things that you all have been trying to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of what I've had to do as a musician over the 30 years of my career as a
mm-hmm.
Music professional, it's always had to be me reacting and responding to how the industry goes. Okay. Or I was always a person that went against the industry because I didn't like the business side of music. So I've always tried to find ways around that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now the music industry is so, it's done. Wow. You know, they've estimated that the music industry itself is going to lose $9 billion in 2020.
That's a lot of money.
They say the television and movie industry is going to lose over
$100 billion.
Wow.
So, you know, we've had to switch up what we've done, and we have 2020 vision now. Mm-hmm. COVID-19 has allowed us to have 2020 vision. And now artists who have always been about connecting real life and music to mm-hmm. the people.
Right.
Are being more mindful now.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to create the music they want to create.
Right.
I'm creating the music that I know that needs to be created. I never was a person to try to create for a market.
Yes, yes.
And you kind of have to think about it a little bit,
right?
You know, when you're creating music, if you want to put it on the radio. But now the whole industry is just kind of, it's just been turned upside down. So you have a lot of creative artists all over the world
yes.
creating things that they know people are going to like. Right. And not worried about getting placed on a certain format.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been creating the music that I've always wanted to create. I have been collaborating with musicians
yes.
that I wanted to collaborate with for Southwest Soul Circuit. You know, my producer for hire business has picked up
mm-hmm.
because everybody wants to start to tell their story through music.
Right.
So that segment of my business has picked up.
So it sounds like with this whole pandemic thing with artists, it's kind of like giving them a freedom to just really do what they have.
Well, it's forcing us to have to be real, because right now it's not just all rainbows and unicorns.
Like, right.
To get to the dawn.
Yeah.
It had to get dark.
Yeah, right.
So that's you true. Have people who are paying their bills off of playing in clubs and restaurants, whatever.
Yeah.
And those restaurants are open. Those clubs aren't open.
Right. That, yeah.
You have true. Music venues shut down, and they're shutting down for good.
Yes, that's true.
Right.
So that's the dark night of the soul kind of
yeah.
situation going on. Mm-hmm. And it's forced individuals to be 100 with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've learned a lot about being mindful.
Right. I mean, yeah.
Mindfulness and breathing, meditation and all this stuff wow. to help us get through this. But the operative word is through.
Right.
So those of us who make it through, we're going to come through more mindful and incorporate that in our music. So,
yeah, I mean, it's amazing how the stillness and people had to really sit with themselves
mm-hmm.
and they had to look at themselves in the mirror. And a lot of folks didn't like what they saw.
And a lot of our friends didn't make it.
And a lot of our You're friends right. didn't make it, yeah.
They didn't make it through it. And it's really hurtful. You
it
know,
is.
We had some amazing artists here in right. Tucson. We had some amazing individuals who are not here anymore
mm-hmm.
because of it. But those who make it through, those of us who make it through, we are going to, one, find a way to create art that connects even better with our audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And two, we're learning business. I've always tried to help my young musicians understand and vocalists understand that Walmart is not hiring singers. They're not hiring musicians. So you're an independent contractor.
Yeah.
So you need to understand how to run your business
mm-hmm.
as an independent contractor. So now everybody's starting to think about how do I make a living with this thing that I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've been doing for 30 years. And it's been hard. Mm-hmm. But before, they didn't want to hear it. Now right. it's like, hey, let me figure this thing out. So mm-hmm. it's a blessing and a curse. But I think at the end of the day, it's our minds are clear.
Yeah.
There's no faking and fumbling.
Nope. Yeah.
Like what they say, you can't fake the funk on a nasty dunk. You can't fake the funk on a nasty dunk these days. You have to be about what it is you're about.
That's true. Yeah.
So, and that's the beauty of it right
mm-hmm.
now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So with all that said, so what's next for Southwest Soul Circuit?
I have so many projects that I've been putting on the back burner for year after year.
Oh,
after
yeah.
year. I'd hate to tell you how many album projects myself I have on the back burner.
Yeah, yeah. That,
but I've put everyone else's albums out. I've produced maybe about 13 albums since I've been here in Tucson for clients. So first and foremost, we're putting our projects up front.
Good deal.
Right. And working with the individuals we know who can help us, who can collaborate with us to get it out. Mm-hmm. And then I've also been working with some really good clients who have very interesting projects. I've been taking on projects that I believe in. So one is with a guy named Joe Edwards. He has a musical called Reparations. He's been working on it for years. Ooh. And so I'm the musical director for that. And I've produced two songs already.
Wow, with that.
And it's a really interesting project, really, really strong project. And then I have a couple of other clients who are dealing with, you know, today's social and political tension through their music. And then I have a real cool, fun collaboration with Tom Walbank, the guy who plays the steel guitar and the harp for your theme song.
Wow.
We're going to mix, we're going to do a collaboration between hip hop, soul music, and blues, steel guitar, and harmonica.
And that's one thing I didn't say. You guys produced the theme song for the show.
Which is
great. I really enjoy it. And I'm hoping that you can produce some more music for us for the show.
That's what we do, man.
Yeah, you know? I know you do.
We love it. That's what we do.
But
as far as our internal projects, I really don't want to put them out there now.
But
just know that with all of the artists that I've worked with before on the top level, they will be involved with my projects now. When I roll them out, it'll be rolled out right.
All right.
Yeah. That's right.
And they'll be complete.
That's really nice, man.
Yeah.
Now, you being from Texas.
Hey.
And
don't mess with Texas.
Don't mess with Texas.
Growing up in Texas, man. And, you know, tell us a little bit about food and, you know, being this young kid in Texas and coming up there. And
man,
I know you enjoy food and how was it growing up in Texas? And tell us a little bit about that.
So, man, look, my mom's the baby out of 17 kids.
Wow. Whoa. Yeah.
And so, you know, there's some cooks up in there.
There's some cooks, bruh.
And, man, where do I start? You know, every time I would come home from the military, visit my mom's, you know how moms would cook your favorite meal.
Yeah,
you know, my mom fried some good mama fried chicken and some cabbage, good fried cabbage with some cornbread, macaroni and cheese, red beans and rice, and a little pound cake on the side, some lemon meringue pie, banana pudding,
my goodness,
peach cobbler,
my goodness,
and then one of the best cooks in the family, she moved down to Port Arthur, Texas, which is on the Gulf.
All right.
So, you know, all of that good gumbo, and they're like right on the border of Texas and Louisiana. So all that good gumbo and all that boudin and all the good southern, you know, South Texas soul food down off in there, and greens. Man, and my dad, I would always tell people who are not familiar with Texas. You remember back in the day when little girls would get the little easy bake ovens? But I would always say the little boys would get little barbecue pits, little grills, how to grill. So if you know how to grill, then you got a little value to you. If you don't know how to grill as a man, you might as well get a scarlet letter A and put on your chest. They gonna talk about you. You don't want anybody to know that you don't know how to grill. So I love, you know, grilling with charcoal. You know, never really got good with the propane. Something about that is just doesn't seem.
So what are you doing now as far as like cooking and grilling and
so and, yeah so you know Tanisha and I became pescatarians. So we got away from so much beef. Right. So I'll do beef maybe once a month.
Okay.
You know, or once or twice a month now.
And see, being a Texan, that's the first thing out of your mouth is beef.
Do you know how big of a thing that is for a Texan to say? that they're not eating beef every day.
Man.
We eat beef.
We got Texans that breakfast, listen to the show, man. They probably like, who is this dude?
And dinner.
Like, who is this dude?
He ain't from Texas. I'm older, man. I can't have all that beef in my I can't have all that beef in my system no more, man. I love it still, but I'll still grill a ribeye
every now and then.
Every now and again.
There you go. Yeah.
But then you know, I'm doing a lot of fish.
Yeah.
And shellfish, you know, shrimp and things of that nature. And, you know, I make a mean salad, man.
Yo.
I make a mean tossed salad.
Yeah. Okay.
I had to say that right.
Okay.
I had to say that the right way.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
I make a great tossed salad with spinach. And, yeah, you know, but, you know, but I love to grill. And, you know, I'm doing a lot of vegetables, you know, red beans and rice still on the plate without the pork. I stopped eating the pork, you know. Yeah. Mm. But, you know, we do chicken maybe once a week or something like that. But then we try to find ways to, you know, eat yams and things like that.
Yeah.
Without as much sugar.
Well, I must say, man, it's noticeable that you drop some pounds, man. Hey. You're working on that fitness. Most folks got the COVID-19, and so, but you trimming down during COVID.
Well,
so.
You know the thing is, man, I need to put my music out.
Right.
And so I don't need to be having that belly rolling all out, you know, come up on stage. Y'all need to see me looking good, you know. So I still got a few LBs to get rid of, but but that's part of the mindfulness, you know. I'm just trying to make sure I'm fit. I'm strong. Mm-hmm. You know, as a singer, you have to be. I don't think people understand how athletic you have to be.
Oh yeah, the fitness
to sing.
That's a good point.
I must say, I mean, as a matter of fact, you know, I'm not a great singer, man, or anything, but I did take voice lessons. You gave me some voice
you
lessons.
You ever hear him sing?
I have never heard him sing.
So
you should sing Georgia one day.
Georgia.
Oh my God, he sounds just like Ray Charles, man. See, this dude got that Ray Charles voice,
oh,
man.
Oh, we're gonna have a karaoke session, I guarantee that.
But I did realize, man, once you started giving me those voice lessons, man, that breathing, man, you do have to have some fitness to sing well.
I got a funny story about that. When I was in the Air Force, early 90s, I had a choir. Mm-hmm. Guys from the Marines and Navy and Air Force, all the guys mixed in. Had a male chorus.
One of the groups was a male chorus. Okay.
And I had this big old yoked up Marine dude, brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Just swole up. This arms big as my waist. This big old dude.
Right.
And I'm up here teaching him how to sing.
Uh-huh.
And talking to him about controlling his breathing. And he wanted to make sure he showed out for the Air Force guys because he was on Air Force Base as a Marine.
Right.
He didn't want the Marine didn't want to look.
Mm-hmm. We have to show out, especially on an Air Force.
You're on Air Force Base with Air Force musicians.
Right.
You're a Marine trying to, you know, show me you can do it. Anyway, I was showing him how to do some breathing exercises.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that dude, he was so ate up with that breathing exercise, man. He did not inhale after he started exhaling and didn't inhale. And I almost passed out.
Oh, Lord.
I'm like, calm down, dude. This is regular breathing, man. You ain't got to show out with this. It's just basic breathing. It was so funny, man. But, yeah, you have to be in good condition.
Yeah.
You know, especially, you know, I look at Beyonce, I look at all these artists who not only sing
and perform,
but they dance, they're moving. You know, when we were talking before the show about the shows that I would do at Jamaica Bay.
Yes.
Do you realize that was 4 hours?
Yeah. I mean, you guys take a few breaks, but you guys realize
I was a lead singer. I was a lead singer for this group.
Good night.
I had to sing and dance and perform for 4 hours straight.
Wow.
It took me a year to get in the condition to be able to have the breath control and the vocal control to be consistent enough to sing 4 hours, four nights a week.
Amazing.
Yeah, so it's an athletic thing for sure.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that's great, yeah.
Yeah, so. But I appreciate you, Ken, for following us. Oh, you know, man.
You know, always been a fan. Always been a fan. And I'm looking forward to the things you got coming up in the future. And I mean, you just mentioned that musical, man. And so I'm really gonna be looking out for Reparations, baby.
We'll talk about finding some folks that can help us get that project all the way where it needs to be.
All right.
Where can they find you?
We have a website. It's www.swsoulcircuit.com. We also have a presence on Facebook, Southwest Soul. Just look up Southwest Soul Circuit on Facebook. Also, you can follow me on IG at Kevin Soul Man. And then, you know, you can inquire about lessons, coaching. You can inquire about production time or booking us at our website at swsoulcircuit.com.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a wonderful experience.
Yeah, man. This has been cool, man.
I learned some new stuff about Kevin Hamilton at Southwest Soul Circuit on the show.
Hey, man. I'm an open book, man. Whatever you want to know. I really appreciate you, man, you know, supporting us. It, as much as it's been healing for me to do music, I realized at some point that there's a purpose on our lives, and it really is to uplift, inspire, and entertain the community through our art.
That's beautiful, man.
Yeah. So I appreciate, you know, every time you share that stuff, I appreciate it, man, because it lets us know that we're on the mark, you know?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
We appreciate everybody listening today with Kevin Hamilton. And All right. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
Hey, thank you for joining us on today's show. Next week, we're going to have Shannon Roberts. He's the owner and operator of the Hush Social Club. We look forward. Hush is going to reopen here pretty soon. So we look forward to talking to Shannon. Please tune in next week.